Welcome back to Porsche Club Insider, episode number 9. We're almost to double digits, Manny. We are here at Podcast Studio at 5 North Main. Thanks to the coffee bar Bel Air for the delicious coffee and, of course, the free Wi-Fi. I'm here with the Insider crew. I'm your host, Vu Nguyen, PCA's executive director. I'm here with Manny Albin, our technical director. Rob Sass is on the line. Damon Lowney, our digital media coordinator, is here with us. And we have a special guest today. You've seen him before. You've seen him on Tech Tactics Live. He's done a number of amazing videos for us, spotlight videos. He's the owner of Columbia Valley Luxury Cars, Nathan Mers. What's up, bud? Good to have you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Vu.
So, folks, what has been going on since we've last recorded?
Yeah, I think it's first worth pointing out that Nathan is on the West Coast.
Oh, yeah.
7:30. But Nathan, I think he wakes up at 4 in the morning, runs 20 miles.
Dude's a machine.
And it's not on the street. He has to run through the woods, through streams, over everything that's not normal. And because I see this on Facebook. And then by 7 o'clock, he's posted what he's run and what he's done. And I'm just getting out of bed at that point on the East Coast.
He is a machine. And he invites me on these adventures, and I decline every single time.
What are you running from, Nathan?
Which explains why Nathan's blood pressure numbers are half of Manny's.
Hey, with medication, I am perfect.
Well, this is the beauty of a podcast. You guys can't smell me. So because it is 7:45, I came directly from a workout. So
oh, of course you did.
You wouldn't want to be in person with me. But today we had a lot of fun. We did what we call cinder block coupon carries. We did a coupon mile, meaning we carried two cinder blocks for a mile. Farmer carry style, so one block in each hand. So a lot of fun.
I don't know. Do you understand what fun means? Because I hear that and that doesn't sound fun to me.
I would rather have you beat me with those cinder blocks than do what you just described.
I'm thinking of Nathan and his crew carrying cinder blocks at 5 in the morning next to the street. You know, all those passerbys.
I do remember at Tech Tactics East 1 year where you had the great idea of inviting a few of us to do your little workout at the crack of dawn. Actually, I think it was like 4 in the morning. And Damon went along. I was smart enough to say no. And didn't you like end up like throwing up on the side of the road?
Yeah, I did. You know what? When you don't run for a while and, you know, never start smoking cigarettes, yeah, it doesn't go well exercising.
But you know what? Kudos to you for trying, because I didn't even try. Anyways, before we even get started, wanted to wish Damon a happy birthday.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
How are you?
34, if you can believe it.
34. I remember 34. Man, that was a long time ago.
He's not the baby, though. In the Connor, I think, is the youngest, right?
Connor's the youngest, but I still look at him just like I still see him as the young 20-some-year-old that joined PCA and kind of tagged along with us down to Daytona. And I think we put you in like a little golf cart or no, a little like little play go-kart
thing.
Yeah,
we've got a picture there. Yep.
Yeah.
7 years with PCA around there.
Oh, how time flies.
Yep. So what do we do this since the last podcast? Well, it's been pretty darn cold in the Northeast, and we've had some Northeasters come through. But my region did have a member breakfast.
Oh, yeah. I've been seeing Chesapeake region pumping out all sorts of events.
Yeah, we did that. Another member had a non-PCA get together with some Porsche friends at his house. Beautiful garage that I thought, Rob, I thought this would be perfect for some kind of photo shoot that revolves either being in front of the garage or in the garage because of the lighting. It's all like, I think, cedar wood. Beautiful garage he has. And so they had a whiskey tasting event.
Ooh.
I don't drink whiskey, so...
So you just
I just took it for their word what the quality of the whiskey was. But yeah, so this weekend coming up, of course, the podcast will already be out, Damon, or will not be out yet, whatever everyone look at it. 60 degrees. This is like
I am looking forward to it.
Springtime in February.
Wow. And it did rain last week, so a lot of the salt was washed off.
Yeah, but they laid more out yesterday when the...
Oh, they did?
It was... But that doesn't matter. It's fine.
Yeah.
We'll still bring the cars out for cars and coffee and at least squeeze in one nice day in February.
I did get a chance to go down to the Porsche Experience Center in Atlanta. Had a meeting down there with Mr. Mark Harston and our president, Tom Korsuch, just to go over some things for 2022. And it was nice to be there. It was actually fairly quiet because the, I guess, how do you say, the normal staff is still working from home, but the experience center is open and cars were on track. The classic center, what, you know, people were working on cars, and I got to see the new GT3 in the lobby, black on black on black. Man, was that thing gorgeous. I think I got a photo. I'll share it with you, Manny. You can post it later. Man, what a good looking car. And then Porsche Club Insider, if you make a reservation to the 356 restaurant up above, one of the best meals there is the cutlet?
Veal?
Yeah. What's it called? Schnitzel. The schnitzel. Oh, my gosh. So good. So anything going on with you, Rob?
Anything new going on with me? Nope. Just looking forward to Works and seeing everybody down there.
Okay. Yeah. Works is, we'll jump around a little bit, but Works is sold out in terms of the Corral. It's sold out for the 996 display, sold out for the judged area, but spectators are welcome to come. We have plenty of spectator parking, $40 cash per car. You come in and enjoy the day with us.
That's per car, not person. So you can squeeze.
If you got a clown car,
Suburban, you can squeeze 10 people in there. Hey.
Yeah, just makes it a better value. How about you, Damon? Any car stuff?
A little bit. I'll bring up the Camry yet again, but I'll leave it at that. Went snowboarding. It's a snow car. Had a lot of fun. I also broke my glasses. So
yeah, so we were thinking about starting a GoFundMe for his glasses. Yeah,
I look like Harry Potter
right now. You can't see it, but he's got duct tape across the top and the bottom.
His glasses look pretty like bad. My convertible top on my BMW.
Exactly.
Yeah. I've got a replacement coming in. So.
And you broke them how?
I was actually was not wearing them. They were in my pocket. And the one time I fell snowboarding, I fell right on the glasses. So go figure.
Were you like the kid in A Christmas Story? Did you hear the crunch and knew that you broke your glasses?
Yeah, I got to the bottom of the run, opened my pocket up, and it was just a bunch of parts.
A pile of glasses. How about you, Nathan? You're constantly shopping and stuff for your business. Come across anything cool?
You know, I mean, the beauty of what I do is I do get to come across some cool stuff. We'll talk a little bit later in the episode, but I was just down at Scottsdale, so had the opportunity to visit a couple collections of cars and meet with some people that, you know, want to move some cars around. And of course, everyone's asking this question of like, is now the time to sell? And I said, you know, I would be a much wealthier man than I am if I actually had a right answer to that. I just tell people, hey, we know if nothing else, it's like, you know, if you're up at the tables in Vegas, it's time to go home to back to your hotel room. And I said, you know, if you sell now, you're likely going to win. But it's been pretty funny because you go look at stuff and now everyone's looking at these auction results and say, well, you know, gosh, this 993 cab sold for 160, so mine's got to be worth 200. So there's always that awkward moment where I have to explain, yeah, that may not be your best comparable. But so it's been an interesting few weeks for sure.
Well, we'll definitely get into some of the details of what you experienced last week. Speaking of last week, I spent the weekend on my computer. We normally have our national staff assembly. This is where the top level volunteers and PCA kind of come together and prepare for the upcoming year. We were supposed to do that in Jacksonville, but unfortunately with travel issues and COVID, we just did it on Zoom. And the good news is we've got a lot planned for this year. The bad news is we totally miss being together. And you know, I can't wait for all of us to be together at Works.
I don't see, to me, these meetings were kind of fun, actually, when they were in person.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely.
It was, you know, because you saw people you hadn't seen for a few months, and a good way to get ramped up for the season, get excited. I spent, I think, 15 minutes on one of the calls with the zone reps. I could not see this doing this for 2 days.
Yes.
Because you lose the whole
dynamic. I did it for 3 days. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah.
And
kudos to you, my friend.
So it's necessary. It's better than not doing anything at all. But yeah, there's a lot missing when you just do it on Zoom. And I think people are zoomed out too. And our volunteers they're amazing that they stick through it and we're getting the course of business done. But I'm so ready to kind of get back to normal.
And for those who've written wondered how PCA works, This is just a small example of, you know, volunteers giving up their weekends, sitting in front of a, or sitting in front of a computer under Zoom, discussing different issues, challenges, and what the plans are for the coming year. So it's something that's not very much fun, but has to be done.
And what made it even more difficult is it was the same weekend as Daytona. So as we're was it the same weekend as Daytona?
No.
Are you sure?
This past weekend.
That was 2 weekends ago.
Oh, two weekends ago. I was probably on another call. But speaking of Daytona and the finish, and that's what we wanted to talk about, but we didn't get to, is what I'm getting at.
Yes. Yeah.
So what'd you think of that finish for those of you that watched? Oh, spoiler alert if you didn't watch it.
It was incredible. I think, you know, hopefully people who watch it understood what was going on there. You have two teammates. They're both Porsche factory drivers. They're driving both, you know, GT3 Rs. Two laps left in a race. After 24 hours, these guys are literally nose to tail that close. So kudos to IMSA for their rules package, which put these cars so close. And a lot of the classes were the same way. After 24 hours, they were that close. So you had one team, the Fast team, who was running the whole season, and they had the they're looking for points because they want to win the championship. And the other team, which was Porsche factory supported team, this was a one and done for them. So as Lawrence Van Thor said, you know, it was either win or nothing. So when he went for that pass in the, I guess it's called the La Mans chicane now, not the bus stop anymore. You know, it wasn't a dumb move or a miscalculated move. He was taking his last chance to possibly make a pass and win this race. And I think in his Instagram post the day after he posted, he cried the whole lap afterwards because, you know, it was very, it was tough on him to lose a race that close. But it also, he also posted a picture of him hugging it out with the other driver, Jimenez, I think, and Jimenez, who won the race, but they're good friends. And it was a clean race. It wasn't, no one spun another person out. It was, an incredible commercial for IMSA racing. If anybody isn't sure about watching IMSA racing, get ready for Sebring.
But do you think the opinions would have been a bit different if that touch and go had put both of those cars out and the outcome of the race would have been different? Letting yes. the car behind it win.
I am sure the folks at Porsche Motorsports North America have no fingernails left because they were probably dying watching these cars, two drivers bang it out with the Ferrari, who was in third, just watching these two guys. Because whenever you have two drivers like that side by side, the person that really benefits is the person behind.
Yeah.
Because they're driving the line and they're getting closer and closer and closer. And I know when I was club racing, I made many a pass from watching two people in front of me battle it out and lose time. So I would take advantage and make pass both of them when that opportunity came. So, yeah, it was exciting all around. So glad it worked out. Porsche won.
Yes, we were all very happy about it. Speaking of being happy, did you guys see the Sport Classic spy shots that were dropped? The 992 Sport Classic? Or for those that don't know, what Sport Classic is, Nathan, can you let people know what the original Sport Classic was all about?
You know, you're going to put me on the spot, Vu. You know, I believe it or not, you're actually going to put me one of those ones where I don't actually know that much about.
Wow.
What?
Isn't that shocking?
That is so shocking. Highly of you, a Nathan. 997 Sport Classic, and you're not familiar. Well, is it because that car wasn't offered in the U.S. and therefore off your radar?
I think that's a primary reason. And I've got to say this in a nice way, but, you know, there's so many late model special editions, you know, that. That was when they introduced that car. I was so deep in my air-cooled era, I didn't really look up.
So let's see if you can't phone a friend and have Mr. Sass share his knowledge and deep thoughts on the Sport Classic.
Well, we've talked about this before. I love the car. You know, I'm partial to the 997 to begin with. I love what they did with it. I love the fact that they devised this kind of bespoke double bubble roof, the ducktail. I love the colors. You know, I love the fact that they're, you know, they're pretty exclusive. The only ones that are here, I think there are probably 8 or 10 of them here, something like that. They're all here under the show and display rule. And I think it's a super cool you know, sort of later model 911. It wasn't sold here, I believe, and Manny probably knows this better than I do, but I think that the new roof design would have required new crash testing and everything else with DOT.
So one of the benefits of having been president was at the banquets, you usually got to sit next to someone interesting, usually executives. But one time I sat next to Boris Appendink. Or Appenbrink.
Appenbrink.
Anyways, he's Boris is the head of Porsche Exclusive. And the Sport Classic was his first project. And, you know, he went all in with this car. And I asked him about the double bubble roof, you know, because that was unusual at the time. It wasn't, we hadn't seen a double bubble roof, I guess, back until the, Zagato 356. It was a long time since we had seen a double bubble roof. And he said that almost didn't happen because of the production line. He said on the production line at this point, it's all automated. It's a robot that puts the roof on the car. And it either chose a sunroof or no sunroof. Two choices. And so when he proposed the idea, and all these levels he had to go through the board to do everything on this car. And when they got to the roof, they said impossible. We would have to change our whole line. And the robot doesn't recognize this. It's just not going to happen. And they were only building, I think, 250 cars. Maybe that's the number.
It's a pretty rare car.
Yeah. It's and so basically what they proposed was they would hire someone who would sit next to where these sunroofs or non-sunroof roofs were stacked up. And when they saw Sport Classic coming down the line, they would basically replace, I think, maybe on the sunroof side, with a double bubble. And so the robot, you know, it just picks up whatever's there and whatever's being told. So it would pick up the double bubble, stick it in, do the weld job, and off it went. And they did this for the whole run of the cars, and they didn't have to change the production line or whatnot. But yeah, the whole story that Boris told me that evening about the car, from how they painted it, it looks like a primer.
Mm-hmm.
But they said, whittling...
what gray is it? Fashion gray or... I don't think it's fashion gray, but it's a very unique gray.
But the first time Wendland Wiedeking saw it, who was the CEO at the time, he looked at it and then and they couldn't tell if he was joking or serious, but he said, okay, when are you going to paint it?
When are you going to paint it?
It's actually called Sport Classic Gray.
Oh, Sport Classic Gray.
Yeah, so, Boris, you know, he went in all in on this and it worked out, you know, really cemented him as somebody, to watch, and now he's the head of Exclusive. And if you don't follow him on Instagram, you should, because he's always posting some interesting stuff that Exclusive comes out with. But yeah, I love the car, and I know the Ingram collection had one. I think that's the only one I've ever seen. As Rob said, there's more in the country, but
And we have a great story with the Sport Classic. One, if I'm not mistaken, that car reintroduced a number of parts and look from the past and applied it to a modern car. I think that was the first time, I believe that where they reintroduced the Fuchs wheel to a modern car. They reintroduced the ducktail for a modern car, and as Manny said, the double bubble roof. And so just it is a very classic looking car, even though it's a modern car. And when we were putting together our ideas for the PCA Club Coupe, the 2015/16 Club Coupe, Boris was involved in that development, and there was a number of things such as the wheels and the ducktail that we integrated into the classic Club Coupe. So that's our relationship back to the Sport Classic. Very cool car.
Manny, is the roof the reason the car didn't come to North America, or is that an urban legend?
I it's a good question. I had my feeling was that it was a limited production and they didn't need to bring it to the United States.
Yeah. And they sold every single one of them when they introduced it. Right. So.
Yeah, it was, I know some people say, well, you know, it's just a cosmetic car. You know, it wasn't anything special performance wise, but still it was a seminal car. It's a car that I think showed the world what Porsche Exclusive could do, and that Porsche could build these very special cars. And, you know, I think it still holds its value very well.
Any details on the 992 Sport Classic that they, was it just photos, or did they say it's going to come to the US or?
Well, the photos show a double bubble roof,
ducktail,
the ducktail Fuchs sort of style Fuchs wheels. Mm-hmm. The photos I'm looking at, it's doing winter testing. So it's out there in the snow.
Hmm. Those are the photos of the black car.
Yep. The black car,
the black car.
Yeah. It's all black wheels. It looks good. I like it.
Yeah.
What I think is funny, cause I just saw spy photos this morning of the new Cabriolet, and I have to chuckle to myself, because to the average person, I even struggle to see what the differences are. Because it'll say like facelifted front bumper, and I'm like trying to look for this black, because they try to hide it.
Yeah.
What's the difference? And I said, spy photographers hate this, because Porsche, of course, never does anything, you know, revolutionary, if you will. Everything's evolution. And, you know, there may be the very, very type of enthusiast who's measuring little things on bumpers can notice the difference, but it must really bite to be a photographer and say, no, believe me, this is a new one. This is a big difference from the one before.
Well, we talked about a car that was kind of put together as a spy shot that you dropped, Damon. I didn't even know about it, but I got to see it, and that was the GT1 drop.
Yep, the GT1 electric. We had a colleague, Lars Salzer, I believe over in Europe, I think Germany. He does our illustrations for us, and we imagined, what if Porsche had one of those crazy sort of Rimac Nevera style electric cars with a solid state battery? And yeah, go to pca.org or look on our social media channels. But it's a very classic design, looks, takes a lot of design cues from the 99 or the original GT1, with the sort of fried egg style headlights, but done in a very clean fashion. There are less air openings because it's electric, which Manny noted when we were talking about what the specs would be. You know, it's got electric motors. It still needs cooling, but not as much. So clean design, not as many spoilers and swoops. Yeah, it looks very good. Check it out on PCA.org.
The original GT1, that was the street car, that is, was developed because of a racing series and it needing to be having a sort of a street car equivalent, right? In today's world, would something like that happen, you think?
It could, with the hypercar class.
Creating a hypercar, sure. GT1.
Yeah, I don't think the GT1 Strasse or street car was developed for homologation
purposes. Oh, it wasn't?
Oh. No, they didn't make that many. At least my understanding was it wasn't done for that reason. But what Damon was alluding to with the fact the electric wouldn't have a lot of the openings or cooling ducts was based on a interview we did of Norbert Singer and Tony Hatter. Tony Hatter designed the 993, but he also designed the GT1. And at the last Rennsport reunion, the last, I think, interviews were, we did where, you know, we have a PCA tent and people are welcome to come in. It's about 100 people can sit. And then we usually have fascinating drivers or engineers or designers. So this time we had a engineer and a designer, which I thought was really cool. And Norbert Singer, of course, set up the GT1 for racing at Le Mans. Tony Hatter designed it. And the one thing that always stuck in my mind was how Hatter talked about this beautiful GT1 he designed. It was just a work of art. And engineers got a hold of it and just hacked holes in it. And, you know, because Norbert Singer was, yeah, it was a beautiful car, but
we need to make it functional.
Exactly. We had to make it fast. Yeah. And so they cut all these holes in it and, you know, really changed the design of it. So when Damon was writing up the story about this prototype, I mentioned to him, I said, you know, now being electric, all this stuff that Tony lost would probably be gained back. And, you know, it'd be interesting how electric will change a lot of this, where motorsport got a hold of the car and suddenly the openings had to be wider, or you had to put additional openings or whatnot, then the cooling isn't as necessary.
Mm-hmm. Active aero, which, you know, would be on a car like that. But think, you know, the 918 Spyder had just under 1,000 horsepower. We already have the Rimac Nevera, 2,000 horsepower. But anything Porsche makes in the future that's going to be a hypercar, it's going to have more than 2,000 horsepower, is what I got to think. Isn't that crazy?
That's insane. That is insane. Why?
But there's a lot of aero though. What we learned from the GT3 was Porsche wasn't saying, hey, we made this much more horsepower. Porsche basically sent a message, the difference is all in aero now. And I think you're going to see that with a lot of the hypercar. You're going to see some really incredible aero I know what you're thinking, 2,000 horsepower. When does it end?
That's what I'm struggling with. We talked about when's enough is enough on rebuilding a car and putting money back into the car in the last episode. And I'm thinking with this, like, when is enough horsepower? Enough, like, 1,000 boggles my mind. I can't imagine 2,000. Like, I don't know that my body could take that. And where the heck would I drive it? So, I mean, in my world, 300, 400 horsepower is plenty. Am I missing something? Everybody wants more. Everybody wants 1,000, 2,000. I see these like Hellcats with 900 horsepower going sideways on the highway, and I'm like, why? Why? What do we need all that for?
Bragging rights. people need the best, right?
People want bigger. Bigger is better. And for those who've been around long enough, we understand a little nuance actually is better. But it's hard to resist the lull of a big number.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, you know, I've driven a modern Turbo S that's what 2.30 to 60, and of course I had to try the launch in it. It freaking hurts your head. It feels like your brain is hitting the back of your skull. I can't imagine wanting to go faster than that.
Right. At some point, is, you know, physics and what the human body can actually take going to come into play? I mean, seriously.
And if they're really
doing 0 to 60 in under 1 second, are you going to black out? I mean,
and the thing is,
what's the G force?
Like, that's cool to experience, right? But you're like intentionally doing that to have that experience. But just driving the car normally, is it any more fun to have, you know, 500 versus 2,000?
I mean, probably not.
It's not usable, as I guess.
Having not driven one of these 2,000 horsepower cars. Probably.
Having said that, I would really like to experience driving 1,000 horsepower and 2,000 horsepower. Maybe that's why I can't understand it, because I've never driven one.
I just wonder how quickly it gets old. Because, you know, how many times have we been in Teslas and the owner has, you know, floored it? And yeah, you get your head thrown in the back of the seat. But after then while, it gets kind
of
old.
The rest of the drive is boring.
Exactly. It's like, now what? You know, there's, to me, they're much more fun. It's so much fun just to take a nice curvy road, and sometimes just 201 horsepower from a 911,
yeah,
is more than enough to put a smile on your face.
So
you know, it comes down to the audio soundtrack too. I mean, I had my opportunity to drive a Tesla Plaid a few weeks ago, and the most difficult thing with that is just no audio soundtrack at all. So there's no visceral emotional reaction other than just the sheer awe factor of it. So at least if you're driving like the new 992 Turbo S, you get Porsche sounds along the way, to make that a little bit more entertaining. But yeah, I'm with you. Give me 200 horsepower and a Tail of the Dragon style road, I'm happy.
Hey, Nathan, without bashing on Tesla, but can I ask you an honest question? Like, the steering wheel on a Plaid reminds me of Kit from Knight Rider. Is that like usable?
You talk about the yoke?
Yeah.
The yoke, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be honest, I didn't get the chance to drive the car in kind of a two-lane kind of, you know, aggressive fashion. I was driving on basically, you know, surface roads kind of stuff. So in that environment, it was felt unusual, but not necessarily bad, just it's out of the ordinary.
Like just taking a turn and not having a full circle, that'd be feel kind of weird.
I don't quite know why they did it, but my guess is after you drive it for a few days, it just becomes background noise. But yeah, sometimes I think doing different just because it's different isn't the right answer. But who am I to say?
So speaking of driving a car fun, did you guys see the stuff on the GT4 driving on ice? Now, that kind of power, winter tires, throwing the car sideways, I think that would be awesome. And I think Manny noticed in the article that, yes, that's cool, but he was more excited sort of the background that people missed of that GT4 on ice.
It said it on the right on the door, synthetic, powered by synthetic fuel.
Synthetic fuel being tested.
So that's, to me, that's very exciting. You know, Porsche is moving forward. I know they're manufacturing it or producing it in Chile, but it can only mean good things for the future. maybe extend the life of our ICE cars. You know, electric's coming. I'm not doubting that that's going to come, but I don't think these internal combustion engines are just going to disappear. So, you know, if we can get some clean burning renewable energy, hey, more power to it.
Absolutely. So I came across this story, this next one. It comes back around sort of like a boomerang. And I thought we could probably talk about and kind of set the story straight. A lot of people that own Porsches through the 90s and 2000s thinks their car saved Porsche. We even had someone that's coming to Works Reunion who has a, RS2?
The Audi
RS2, yeah. And how he basically said, you know, can we park in the Porsche Corral with our Audi RS2? Because at the time, you know, Porsche needed help and Audi extended their hand and say, hey, why don't you help us develop this RS2? So therefore it's a Porsche. Okay. So that's one story that people say, but a lot of people talk about how the Boxster saved Porsche when it was on the brink of disaster. Who wants to tell a story on that?
I don't know. Porsche has had a lot of savior cars over the years. I mean, there are some people who argue that the volumes that the 924 and the 944 sold in saved Porsche. The problem is the company didn't stay saved. And as you alluded to, by the mid to late 1990s, they weren't selling very many cars. And they were in dire need of an actual savior. And I think that's where the Boxster comes in.
Yeah, I'm of the camp the Boxster and the 996 saved Porsche.
See, I'm in the camp that it was the 993 that began the salvation when they brought in the Toyota engineers to re-engineer the manufacturing process and the road to profitability started.
What's that called? Kaizen? Kaizen?
Kaizen.
Kaizen, yeah. So that's where it's like production.
Just in time
yeah. Production, right? Yeah. And that started with the 993? I didn't realize it was a 993.
I know. I believe it was the 993. Because the 993, they were, Nathan, I know you know this, right? Didn't the 993 sell for like $5,000 less price than the 964?
Yeah, actually, I believe it was 1992 that Porsche signed the contract with Toyota to come in and help basically figure out how to make a car profitably. Which I'll give them a lot of kudos for that. I'm sure that was a little bit of an ego blow for them to bring them in. And so, but the 993 really is the first car where you'll see the influence. But you got to remember that car was mostly developed by that point, so their influence on that car was fairly minimal. It's little simple things like wiring harness, and you'll notice it was the very first Porsche to ever have a Japanese radio. It had an Alpine radio when they first launched. Really, the real car that had the influence of Toyota was the 986 and 996. But to your point, Manny, yeah, when the 993 debuted here in the U.S. in January of 1994, the original MSRP came down almost $6,000 from the outgoing 94 model year 964. So that's a pretty big, about a 10% drop in cost.
I love how he just drops the knowledge.
That's why I went to Nathan, because I knew he would notice.
He just drops that like it's right in front of him. Like, we didn't prep him for that question. He just drops the knowledge.
But he does it in a way that he doesn't come off as an insufferable know-it-all. I don't know how he does it.
That's why we freaking love Nathan.
But I was in the club, and I remember going to the dealer launch of the 993 and speaking to the dealer principal, and she was telling me how this car was going to sell for. I remember, 5,000 was the number that stuck in my head. I remember asking her, well, how do you sell the remaining 964s on your lot? And she really didn't have an answer because they were, you know, more expensive cars that weren't at the time nearly as pretty as the 993 was.
Right.
And the 983 technology was much higher. But anyways, maybe they should do an article about what model almost sunk Porsche. Everyone's this one saved. Yeah, you're right. Like Rob said, everyone thinks their car is the one that saved Porsche. Which, you know, I always chuckle when I hear the 991 say right. Porsche.
Right. Well, I'm not going to name a model that may have sunk, but I would say that there was a point in time when Porsche was considering to cease development and production of the 911. And I think that crossroad could have gone incredibly wrong.
Right. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think you guys know this, but I worked at a Porsche dealer in the early 90s, and it was kind of funny because I distinctly remember customers coming in, and if you can imagine a store where our, quote, most modern Porsche hit the market in 1978, and that was the 928 was the most modern car, because, of course, the 968 was a derivation of the 924, which came in 77, and, of course, the 911 coming in 1965. So I remember customers coming in and basically saying, well, don't you have a new car? Which seems funny to us now, but no SUV, no Boxster. So our newest car at that time was almost 20 years old. So it was certainly an interesting time.
Yeah, I don't know how you sold it. I mean, when you had the 968 and the 928, I don't know how you sold against the Japanese cars, quite honestly, that were coming out then. When you had the third gen RX-7, you had the 300ZX twin turbo that all undercut the 968 considerably in price. I mean, it sort of gives you an idea why 968s are so rare, why they only sold, you know, probably, what, like 5,000 in the U.S. It's just, I don't know how you sold against those cars in those days.
Well, maybe we'll do a little.
You had what was called a hang tag on the car. We would put these hang tags, which, can you imagine walking into a Porsche dealer now and seeing a hang tag that said, you know, $15,000 off sticker?
Oh, that's, you know, little, we haven't seen that happen in decades.
Oh, I mean, it's funny because all the cars, of course, we lust after now, you know, 928 GTS manuals and America Roadsters and RS Americas.
I remember when RS Americas were stuck on lots, right? RS Americas were stuck on lots. Nobody wanted an RS America.
Oh, if the ones that were stuck on lots were the ones that didn't have air conditioning.
The rare ones.
Or radio or a sunroof. Yeah. The ones that are most desirable.
Crazy. The ones that I have in my garage.
So speaking of your time at the dealership, Nathan, share with us, I'm assuming that's how you got your start for the love of Porsche and then eventually into PCA and eventually here with us today.
Well, it certainly cemented my love. I started my love of cars at the age of 3 and was a little bit out there. But luckily, yeah, being able to work at a Porsche dealer and actually getting the opportunity to be behind the wheel and to work on them and touch them up close and personal started that love affair. But you're right, I just got back from Scottsdale. Those who follow kind of the car auction scene, there's really kind of 3 major sales over the course of the year that really affect our space. And that's really kicked off in January with Scottsdale, quickly followed up with Amelia Island. And then, of course, we all know in Monterey at the end of summer. But we always look at Scottsdale to kind of set the tone. What's going to happen this year? And in particular, I mean, the markets right now are just wild. And so we really wanted to see when we hit the ground, you know, what's the temperature? What's the climate? What are people feeling? What's the energy like in the room? Is it feeling like this is the last hurrah? Because a lot of people think, oh, things are going to come down. They have to. Or is there going to be just this unbelievable energy that seems to surge forth? And I think you do have to go be in person to see that and understand that. And we're going to talk a little bit more when we go into a whole hour about this, so I won't spill all the beans, but we'll have some different perspective on kind of what it felt like to be there. And I think the other thing that I really talk a lot about is people say, well, why do you go to these auctions? You can just preview them in the catalog. You can look at them online. And if someone's going to be a true expert in the field, it's really important to actually touch, see, and smell those cars, right? Because there were some really instructive sales. If you didn't actually go look at the car and you just know the number and you know the catalog description and the photo, you don't really have a sense of whether that car was well bought or well sold.
Yeah. I remember you always talking about how important it is to be there to touch, feel, and observe in person. I think you posted a couple of, I think, Turbo S's, and there's, you know, the end price for a number of these Turbo S's were fairly different. Some of them were extremely high. But someone that's just looking online, just like buying a car online versus you seeing all the details without going into the full market, which we'll talk about later on Tech Tactics Live. Like, what did you see in that car in person versus what you could have seen just looking online?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, these big catalog sales or even some of these online auctions, you look at the photos and everything looks pretty in photos, right? It's really only when you get up and actually touch the car and see the car in person that you understand, like, oh, this really is an example which should set the market. It's a really exceptionally presented, the quality is there, what have you. And then on the flip side, it's only when you see a car and you literally just can't even get your head around how it could possibly even have gotten into that condition. And so, you know, in the 993 Turbo S space, I was really interested because I'm going to be selling one here in just a few weeks. And so I saw two were on offer, one at RM and one at Bonhams. So I wanted to see both those cars in person, and we'll delve more into it at Tech Tactics. But ultimately, those cars represented two different polarities, one at the top and one at the bottom. And
but they both got amazing prices, right? I mean,
both sold for numbers. I would argue that the one at the top sold probably under market. I think that was well bought.
Really? Interesting. Because that was a big number.
At the lower price point, probably someone out there did buy that car. So I'm hoping that maybe they just enjoy a good project. We'll put it politely that way.
Oh, wow.
So that'll be February 23rd. It's a Wednesday night, 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. It's the Tech Tactics Live, a state of the Porsche market with Nathan Mers. Nathan, like Boo said earlier, is a very popular guest on Tech Tactics Live. And everyone wants to see, even if they're not planning on selling, what the value of their car is and where it's going.
It's a great discussion. And speaking of popularity, our last Tech Tactics Live surprised us quite a bit in terms of popularity. We were talking about fuels and fuel additives. Who would have thunk?
Like the least sexy thing you could think of was talking about gas. And wow, we kept almost everyone on
live. We were live, what, 350
for an hour. Yeah. And you know Lake is an incredible speaker, and I think he can make anything exciting. We're talking about Lake Speed Jr.
Yeah, shout out to Lake. Thank you for doing that.
It's with Total Seal, which the comments, if you look at the YouTube comments, they're very flattering. There was one I just read yesterday where somebody who's been 40 years in the refinery business,
yeah,
said this is like the best presentation
he's ever seen.
Yeah, he's ever seen. And you know, Lake had a whiteboard behind him, and he had two cameras set up, and he you know, tried to break down the chemistry and answered a lot of questions. So the things we got from was, if you see a tanker filling up at a gas station, just keep on driving.
Keep on driving. Absolutely.
Don't fill up then.
If you're storing your car, don't start it up every now and again, yes, for 2 minutes and then shut it off. Terrible for your car. Not do that.
Yeah. Just don't. If the pump is moving slowly, we've all run into that. You know, we start pumping and we realize that we've been holding it for a minute. It's not even a gallon in. He says, stop pumping because
go to another gas
station. It could be a clogged fuel filter. It could be at the bottom just sucking up a lot of nasty stuff. So, yeah, it's worth to watch. I know it sounds like a long time, an hour, but I'm telling you, even Robert and I, who were working in control behind the scenes, we were fascinated by the discussion. So it was, it's a very informative.
As a host, it was incredibly easy for me, that show.
Yeah, I think we, Robert and I said, I think Boo said less than 200 words the entire hour.
And that's just fine.
Yeah, Lake was very good at, he had prepared properly for this, and he made fuel exciting.
Yeah, well, he is now known as Professor Speed.
Tribologist, that's a new tribologist word I learned, yeah. Yep.
And tonight we're doing, or filming episode 44, and we're talking about windshields.
And I would think a lot of people, no one wants to replace a windshield, but obviously sometimes things are out of our control. And, you know, if it's for your Toyota or your Ford, you may not think twice about it, but when it's for your Porsche or your other high-end car, you definitely want it done right, and you want to make sure it's done right. And then there's so many questions, like is Chinese glass as good as factory glass? You know, what do you need to ask? What does the installer need to know? So it's going to be an interesting conversation about, you know, windshields and what can be fixed, what can't. And we had spent with Chris Donaldson. He's our guest, and we always do a pre-talk, pre-game show, or not show, but a discussion the day prior, and he was boy.
We got a ton of topics.
I did not realize windshields were this complicated because yeah. He went really techie on us about what's involved and what you have to look for, and so you definitely want to find the right installer.
Yeah, and I would argue that it doesn't matter if you're looking for a windshield for your Porsche or your Honda Odyssey. Getting it done right is very expensive, and he'll share with us some of the nightmares that he's come across or things that he's seen where when a windshield wasn't properly installed, what it could mean to the owner. So stay tuned for that. Let's see, Damon, you dropped the Belgian collection last week.
Yes, I did. We found Rob and one of our Panorama contributors found a collection in Belgium with a lot of rare 911s, including the 911R, which is probably the holy grail of early air-cooled 911s. It's on our YouTube channel, dropped a couple weeks ago, or I guess, yeah, week and a half ago at this point. Great video. You should watch it. And also, we just dropped a video on the TechArt GT Street R, which is a pretty amazing car. It starts the base model that Kevin from TechArt refers to in the video. The base model is a 992 Turbo S.
Yeah, base.
Base. So they start with that. Then they give you 710 horsepower, which is the car that we were profiling here, up to 800 horsepower. So very interesting watch. Head to our YouTube channel to watch it.
Yeah, that car... that car is not for the timid, not necessarily because of the power package that it has on it, but it is a pretty wild body kit. And, you know, the color combinations that you can do, the carbon fiber, the wheels. When we were driving it around the Orange County, I mean, all eyes are on that car.
Yep, all eyes, including police officers.
I was going to say, somebody got pulled over in that car.
So
somebody got pulled over, and then as we drove past.
Let me clarify. I was offered to drive the car, but unfortunately, I figured that kind of car driving around PCH and the Newport area, like it was all just like traffic, and I'm like, it doesn't really make sense for me. And then also, I'll be honest, normally when we drive a member's car or a press car, like we have paperwork that we have to get signed off where they still cover the car. Like we don't put PCA in a potential liability issue. And I didn't feel like going through all of that. So I didn't drive the car. And it turned out to be a good thing because I was driving the camera car with Damon. And we're driving around Newport, I think it was, or
somewhere around there.
And we see a police officer on a motorcycle with a current customer, right? So I'm like, great, we'll just drive by. And again, this car, you just can't help but see it, hear it, and just, you know, gets your attention. Well, it also got the attention of the CHP officer. And he just let that customer go, figuring he would go for this bigger fish.
Yeah, I saw his head snap up and he looked over and, you know, target acquired.
Yes. So I pulled over and waited. And it just turned out to be a registration thing because it was a car that was just built and tags and stuff like that. No big deal. He let us go and or let the driver go. And we continued on with the photo shoot. Rob, what's up with Pano?
What's up with Pano? The February issue just dropped, and it has actually one of my favorite stories that we've done in a while. It's not a huge story, but it's about a guy who started at a really young age as a tech at Brumos and did the pre-delivery inspection on the 2003 996 Carrera 4S, a Guards red car with a factory aero kit. Now, frankly, I've never seen a 996 C4S in the flesh with a factory aero kit. So we saw this car at Works last year. We were talking to the owner, and the more that we talked to the guy, the more interesting the story got. He was still a relatively young guy. He started, I think, probably in his late teens at Brumos. But he bought this car from the guy who bought it originally. And it's the car, like I said, that he did the PDI on himself. It has 202,000 miles on it now. And the car looks like it could pass for a 20,000 mile car. It is absolutely just gorgeous. So, you know, those are the kinds of things that show up at Works. You know, one of the reasons to go to Works Reunion is to get a look at stuff like this and just, you know, be able to, you know, find some really fantastic stories. And I like this one a lot. It really, I love 996s. And for some reason, the story just absolutely resonated with me. So that's,
you mean, didn't it resonate?
It's just coming out.
Didn't it resonate because you had a car just like it?
No, this was a C4S.
Okay, but it was a Guards Red 996 with an aero kit. I think you sold that recently.
I did, but that's...
Rob doesn't remember because he only kept the car for 9 days.
He forgets.
No, it was like 9 months, Nathan. Easily, no, it was
that's
over
a beautiful
year.
Car. I should have... Wait a minute, I did have one.
Wait.
I like the story about the, I got a copy of it right now. The young lady who's converting a 914 to EV.
Oh, Frances, who's yes. like 14.
Yes.
She's
yes.
amazing. She is absolutely incredible. Yeah, that's a fantastic story, too, that John Choldenko did. But yeah, that's it's amazing. I mean, what a confident, I think she's 13 or 14. She's like a good 2 years away from getting a driver's license. Yeah. And she's doing this project. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see. I always thought the 914 was a perfect platform for that. Back when they were really cheap, you know, it was the perfect donor car. Now they've gone up in value, but still, I would love to drive a 914 with EV, see what it's like.
Is that going to be your high school transportation? I haven't read the article yet. I haven't gotten the issue.
I don't know if she'll finish it before she graduates from high school. She's on the same track as I am with my 914. It'll be a while.
But Rob, I'm surprised you don't get news items like, do you guys get Google alerts?
I do.
So I go to Google.
You news. Go to yep. The 34-year-old's
yes,
too hip.
The 34-year-old still does it the old school method. I like to search manually.
I don't need any more emails.
So the old guys get Google alerts. We get the links in our email every day. And, I'm surprised you didn't start the news segment with this. This is from the Daily Mail. And this is where the title is pretty much the entire story.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Here we go. Braless Kendall Jenner flashes taut midriff in crop top as she takes Porsche for a spin with pal Fai Cajadra. And so this is in my Porsche feed of Google. Somehow, none of our stories made this list of newsworthy Porsche-related stories.
Boo, why didn't you pick that one?
But Kendall Jenner, and so this poor writer had to, like, stretch out a story. So they described her entire outfit, which to me looks like jeans and a T-shirt. But they evidently knew exactly who made the jeans, who made the shirt, and whatnot. But kudos to, what's her name? Kendall? Yeah, Kendall. Kendall Jenner. I don't know if this is dad's car or her car, but she drives the 993.
Very nice. Well,
that is actually her car, man. She's very well known to have that. So, yeah, I'll give her some props. She's not someone I follow. But when I saw she had a 993, I said, well, there's got to be something.
Respect. Respect.
Yeah, the thing is, though, yeah, to have a 993. 993s are the LA celebrity car of the moment right now. Keanu Reeves has one. There are like five other LA-based celebrities who have 993 coupes. So, you know, it's they're the flavor of the month.
You're just waiting for them to discover the TBR so you can sell yours. This is what the cool kids are driving.
Well, our last name isn't Jenner. That's why we're not in the feed.
Is that it?
That's got to be it.
Right. And it's had 1.4 billion page views.
I also don't think they wanted to show Vu's midriff. It just wouldn't quite have the same appeal. I'm not knocking you, Vu.
Really? You're going to fat shame me now?
You know, dad bods are okay in 2022, Vu. It's okay.
Dude, really? Someone should end the Zoom link to Nathan. Now he's busting on me. Rightfully so. But just back to the electric thing for 914s. I mean, as we move down... And electric cars and electric motors and electric batteries, you know, I think of TVs. Remember like your Sony XBR TV that was 400 pounds for a 36-inch flat TV. Now you can get an 85-inch TV for like $300 at Costco. When motors and batteries start to kind of come down in price, do you think that people will start making conversion kits for, say, you know, a Boxster or for, Manny, you drove that one 997 that had a electric flywheel, right? From,
yeah, it was a hybrid.
Yeah.
No, I was very impressed. I thought, if this is the future of whatever Porsche is doing, and count me in, because there was no strain on the engine, the gas engine, but it felt like this like incredible turbo of no lag on it when you wanted the power. It was, I was very impressed with, so I think it's Vonnen.
Vonnen. And the technology, for those of you that aren't familiar with Vonnen, is they electrify a flywheel. So they're just simply replacing the existing flywheel. I think there's a little bit of a size difference, obviously, because it's electrified, but now your flywheel is spinning with electrical assist. And you almost have like the way nitrous would hit when you put that through the system. You know, when the electric motor inside that flywheel lets the flywheel spin faster, you're getting that additional power, but everything else on the car is relatively stock. Transmission, motor, you didn't dig or, you know.
Yeah, the way the guys at Vonnen said is that the car only thinks that you're probably just driving down a very steep hill, the way the system works, you know.
And I think the reserve or the amount of power you can send through that is maybe 9 seconds or 10 seconds or something.
Like, actually, I think it was like,
it's like 20 seconds. 20 seconds,
but we couldn't find a street
where you could apply all that
without police getting involved. So I don't think I went below 80% battery or power in reserve, because as soon as you floored it, you went, got so fast that, you know, I kept on looking at the cell phone to see how much power I use, and it was really hardly anything.
20 seconds in any new car, let alone, you know, a Porsche from a few years back, is going to get you in a lot of trouble.
I can only imagine if you were able to get like a 50 to 100 horsepower boost in, say, your 87 G-Body 911, like, that's a lot of increase in power, and you probably wouldn't want more than that because the chassis and the brakes weren't designed for it, but man, that could elevate the fun level for a car, right?
Yeah, percentage-wise, that's huge. And I saw the car. I think they had it at Rennsport back in...
And they've had it at Works as well.
Yeah, and it struck me as a really simple, elegant piece of engineering. And I was curious why none of the OEMs have sort of picked up on it, because it really did make a whole lot of sense.
Well, folks, we are at the top of the hour. Is there anything else we want to share with our listeners?
I guess if you're in the Jacksonville area or you want to get away from the cold for a little bit, book a flight or drive down to a Works reunion.
Yep.
It's going to have a special reveal.
Worldwide reveal with Porsche. Worldwide
reveal from Porsche at Works reunion. Mm-hmm. And this will be the first year of the Hagerty-owned...
Amelia.
They're calling it the Amelia.
The Amelia.
The Amelia. Yep. So they're having Radwood.
Mm-hmm.
They're charging entry now for cars and coffee, but I think it's only $10, so it's not a very expensive endeavor. It's a great
it's an affordable Pebble Beach.
Yeah, Works reunion is on Friday, so
other than parking, if you need to park, it's $40, but everything else is relatively inexpensive. Staying out by the hotel in Jacksonville is inexpensive compared to Monterey hotel prices. So if you have flight credits, or if you just want to take a quick Southwest flight into Jacksonville, it's a fun time. 3 days car stuff in March, when you know you might have snow like Rob in Traverse City up there. So you know, get away from the cold and see some cool stuff.
And parade has registration opened up. It's I don't know if rooms are still available.
Yep, parade's open. It might be worth mentioning Treffen opens on February 16th at 3 p.m. Eastern. We're recording this today is February 9th, so this episode should be out before registration opens. It'll go very quickly.
Yeah, that's going to be at the Treffen Broadmoor, which is a bucket list destination for a lot of people. If you're wanting to go, make sure you set your clocks and register at 3 p.m.,
yep,
sharp, and it goes fast. It's an amazing event, and if you've never experienced a Treffen, we've talked about it before, but it's a 4 or 5 star event that's and evidently no competition.
You don't have to drive your Porsche.
Nope.
Because I ran into a couple few couples at the breakfast I went to, and they are like Treffen devotees. They said that they drive some that they can, and other ones like the Broadmoor, they're going to fly in and they just rent a car and do the tours. But they said they love seeing new places with fellow PCA members, and the locations that PCA picks, the meals, the whole package is more than worth it. So they were like, they were being like salespeople for the Treffen, which, as you said, they don't really need salespeople because the thing sells out all the time. And a lot of people realize how much fun and value it is.
A little insider, I talked about my trip to PEC Atlanta and meeting with Porsche and Mark Harston, and he's going on to another unit in Porsche, but hopefully in his new role at Porsche, we will have access to Porsches in various areas that, you know, for example, if we go to Treffen, it might be an opportunity where if you don't want to drive your car across the country, that the programs that he will be responsible for, that you might be able to, you know, rent a Porsche for that event. And I know our members have asked for that, you know, for, you know, since any of our, you know, from Parade to Treffen, you know, there's so many people that fly in, they would love to have a Porsche, and there's just not that many available if you rent them through like Hertz or the traditional means. So hopefully that's a program that's going to be available to our members. So again, thank you for joining us on the podcast. We would love if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, if you could give us a rating, give us a comment. We certainly listen and appreciate that. For those of you that aren't currently a PCA member, or if you do own a Porsche and you haven't joined PCA, what are you waiting for? Just go to PCA.org, have your VIN handy. If you don't own a Porsche, we have the test drive program in which you can enroll in. It gives you some access to what our members see. And with that, until next time, stay safe and we'll catch you down the road.